All right, let's go back a little bit to the telephone, because I think we lost some of that.
Well, the telephone, we had a party line, and our number was 223-RING-12. And if anybody called and we wanted someone else, one of our friends on the line, we'd say, you hang up and call back in 2 minutes. And we'd call our friend and say, you pick it up when you hear our ring. And so we'd have a three-way conversation going.
In the meantime, a lot of times people didn't say anything.
Yes, a lot of times people listened in. I mean, everybody knew your business. But it didn't bother. But if you wanted to know where the fire was, when the whistle blew, you just called Central and said, where's the fire? And she'd tell you. And if you wanted to know how somebody was, you'd call Central and she'd usually tell you whether the doctor was in or not, and if somebody was sick and couldn't come to the phone. She knew all the news.
Was that Catherine Garrity?
I said, be careful what you say. I was telephone operator.
Oh, well, you were a telephone operator too, Anna?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. For how long?
Oh, I spent about 11 years in Lakeville or 12.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
Before I was married, and then later on after the children had grown a little bit, I was able to leave them. Mother took care of them, and then I went back and helped out.
You worked in Millerton for a while.
I worked in Millerton 7 years.
The one that closed the Lakeville.
I worked until Lakeville went dial. And then I worked in Millerton until Millerton went dial.
Did you go to Canaan?
Yes, I went to Canaan also and worked. It's very fascinating.
Did you have any unusual experiences while you were working as a telephone operator?
I worked the night that we had the terrible ice storm. I don't know whether you remember it, where the trees, the wires and everything was just coated with ice all over, and I was working all night. There was a man, I can't remember what his name was, that was janitor for the Holly Apartments, and he was very worried, and he kept calling in every night, every little while, and say, are you all right? You're not scared. Are you all right? And I'd say, yes, I'm all right.
The noise is terrific.
And everybody was petrified, because when it began to thaw, the poles became a fire, and there was trees burning and everything. It was an awful eerie night. And the man at the White Hart, the all-night clerk up there, was very nice. He kept calling in and saying, are you all right? And he wanted to take me home in the morning when I would be free. But I told him no, I had to.
But where was the telephone building then?
The telephone building was up on the hill, now where the
Community Fuel
is. It was upstairs in that building, mm-hmm. on the second floor. And of course then we had that beautiful inn across from that, the Gateway Inn, which was demolished. What other experience did I have with a...
Thunderstorms were terrible.
Well, we were well grounded so that we had no fear. I used to be very afraid of thunderstorms, but working for the telephone company, you are well grounded. You don't have to really, but we always made it a point to answer every light that came in on the board. And when the lightning flashed, we could tell where the center of the storm was. It would be up in Taconic, or it could be in Salisbury or something, because those are the lines that would come in and flash, and we'd go in on them, because it could be that somebody was in trouble and needed the fire company or something. And in those days, we blew the whistle for the fire company.
Oh, we did.
And we'd have to find out where the fire was and try to find out what kind of a fire it was, you know, whether it's a chimney fire or a house fire or a grass fire. And then we blew the whistle. And then the men at the firehouse were supposed to turn it off. And we also blew the 12 o'clock whistle in those days. Now I don't know who blows the 12 o'clock whistle.
Is there anything else you think that would be of interest?
The Tri-State Fire? Hmm? Remember the Tri-State Fire?
What was that?
Well, I was I was in high school at that time when the fire started over in Copaic and came right over the mountain to Under Mountain Road. And that was pretty awful.
When would that have been, 1920s sometime?
1930. First day of May, 1930. Mm-hmm.
And how many days did it burn? They had Hotchkiss School boys and the seniors.
Well, it burned for a couple weeks. A week it was bad. But
how did the fire start? Was it ever determined?
Somebody dropped a match or something over in Copaic.
In the park over there?
In the side of the mountain there.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived up to the Penny. It was an awfully dry year and awfully hot. And I was building fence at Dr. Simmons' place. We was going to pasture that year, and I was building fence. And you couldn't get a post in the ground. The ground was so hard and awfully dry. And then it had been that way all through April and hot. And that... I was at the Petty place, and it was on a Sunday, and I looked up and seen the smoke, and brother and I watched it for a minute and went to the house and called in alarm, but they had just gotten a call from New York State about it. Somebody had reported it over there. It wasn't long before it was in Connecticut. They said it was over in New York State, nothing to worry about, but it didn't stay in New York State.
And how long did it burn, did you say?
Well, as I remember, it was a good hot fire for a week, but well, it burned a couple weeks or more.
It came right up to Forge Pond, right around Swab's camp.
It was funny, those camps, it was out in the woods, it come right up to them and went around them and we met them.
We could see all the flame behind the mountain, you know, it was all red. And when we came home, we'd been to the movies in Canaan. Remember going around Barkmatep, we could see the fires. Mm. And they backfired some of the mountains. When we got home, Dad had the car out front. My mother was taking care of Grandma. Mm-hmm. And so Dad was in charge, and he had the important papers were in the car. And he told us to go to bed, and if we needed to move out, he'd wake us up. And I slept in the room off the sitting room, and I could hear him pacing back and forth, and I could look out and see the rosy glow, and you could smell the smoke. It was very...
You smell it.
Down in Salisbury.
Right, right down. You couldn't see to go up the Under Mountain Road. Well, the fire came right to the edge of the road anyway.
And then at midnight, Dad came in, and he said, "You can go to sleep now." He said, "It's starting to rain. It'll put the fire out." And that was the end of the fire.
It was certainly awful while it lasted.
I lived up there to the Petty farm, and just as light in that room all night as could be, several nights.
I remember the first radio, the one-tube radio that we bought. It was a Christmas present. We had to go down with a sled to get
it. What year was that?
1925.
You must have been.
And you had two sets of earphones, and either two people sat and listened after you found by turning the cat whiskers trying to find the station,
mm-hmm.
or four people if you wanted just to hold one earphone up.
Mm-hmm.
And then my grandfather came up, and he had a three-tube radio with a speaker, so everybody could listen.
That was quite a thing.
That was really something. Mm-hmm. And the Ford car where you had to get out and out of the front seat and take the front seat off and measure the gas tank, and you put the gas in the front seat. And the
when we went up Avon Mountain, we had to back up
and walk. Well, everybody got out and walked except the driver, and he begged.
Did you have a self-starter on the car, or did you have to crank it?
Oh, no, we cranked it.
Oh, yes. And we backed up and walked up Smith Hill many times.
You get low on gas, you have to back up. Gas would make it up.
And the first time, I didn't see the first television, but they say that everybody sat around with TV trays and ate dinner in front of it and wouldn't leave the television.
Sure.
We had one of the first ones in the town of Salisbury. Now, not the first one, but one of the first ones. And all you got all day long was test patterns. And you could turn it on, and you got this light come on, and it said channel 6 or channel 4, whatever you had it on to,
And that just sat there like that in front of your eyes all day. And then at about
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock at night, then they started the program. And, mm-hmm. and but they had good program.
About and what year was that?
Well, that was in the early 40s. We go with 20. I remember one night the kids was all sitting around the television waiting for the show to come on, and we were raining pretty hard out, and I walked in and I said, there won't be any television tonight. And we had Anna's cousin living with us with her children too, so there was four of them and three of ours. They're all sitting there and their faces fell wide. I said, well, it's raining, the picture's going to get wet. You never saw such a sad bunch of kids in all your life.
So, what do you think are the most important improvements in town since you were
with washing machines? Remember the old scrub boards?
Refrigerators.
Yes, refrigerators is another one. And vacuum cleaners. Remember the old rug beaters?
I still have one.
Yeah, I remember when they hung the rug.
And remember the flat iron for ironing?
That was a dusty
electricity was the most wonderful invention ever.
I think refrigeration is one of the best things.
Yes, I think so too. Because refrigeration embraces a lot of things. But mm-hmm. I remember when we moved to the farm where we are now, we had no electricity. And it was very, very hard to keep your food or your milk.
But we were spoiled and we had had.
Yeah, we'd had refrigeration, so.
And when we moved in that place, nobody lived there for several years.
I know you did, but still, on lowery days.
No, I say, it was a hard life.
I had an old ice box, you put ice in it, remember that? Mm-hmm.
You remember the old ice house on Port Oregon?
Yeah.
There were, I think, on that McHugh.
Hmm?
They were
still
delivering ice.
McHugh owned the land, but the railroad owned the ice house.
They delivered
ice.
They were still making ice down there when we were kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
this was on Porter Street?
Yeah.
When you worked in that ice house, you got paid by the railroad.
I wouldn't know that. No.
Yeah, most of that ice out of that ice house went down the milk train.
I remember them putting up ice, and I remember the salt.
In the last two, 3 years, I guess, some local person put some in there, but they didn't fill it full.
On hot days, we'd always go over and put our heads in because it seemed to be cooler.
It is?
Yeah, when you went in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's cool in there.
What was the pay like? What did you get paid, for example, at the Jigger Shop?
Jigger Shop, I worked Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Right. And I had Monday and Tuesday off, and I worked the rest of the week, and I got $8 for the week. I started work for the telephone company, and I started at 25 cents an hour for 6 weeks, and then I was raised to 28 cents an hour, and that I kept for quite a little while. Now, the wage scale is a great deal higher than it was at that point.
Do you remember the Chautauquas?
Oh, that was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the Chautauqua.
Went for 3 days and three nights, and you got a season ticket that took you to the three afternoon and the three evening entertainments. And there was always a speaker.
Where was it held?
In Roberts Hall, the old Roberts building, on the third floor, and that's also where they held the Hotchkiss School play and the high school play. Mm-hmm. That was a big entertainment center then. There was a dentist and I don't know what else on the second floor. But the Chautauqua, the first day would usually be, somebody would play a steel guitar or something like that in the afternoon, and at night would be a speaker. In the second day, they would have some kind of a one-act plays, things like that. But the big play was the last night. That was the big thing.
One year they had the Swiss bell ringers, and that was beautiful. All those bells set out, and they picked them up and rang them, and it certainly was grand.
Everybody loved it. I mean, it was...
That was one thing everybody liked.
Everybody loved the Chautauqua. And it was always in February. Coldest darn time. everybody went.
Mm-hmm.
I think they came out of Philadelphia, didn't they?
And then every summer, of course, there was the circus thing to town with the a bunch of Ferris wheels and junk, you know, merry-go-round. Mm-hmm. And the time they lost the snake, remember, the python got loose and Doc Monahan thought he had it. He killed a great big snake and it was a water snake from the Port of Orbit.
Well, is there anything else you think of that you'd like to...
Remember the Indian cave? The kids going through the Indian cave?
Over in Salisbury?
No, up in Lone Legged City.
Oh, is there one up there?
Under the road.
The Hotchkiss kids used to go down in there, and they always stopped the house and got candles and matches and rope and anything they could borrow to go down in there.
We never Indian went kids. Down in it. I never
Dad wasn't allowed to. We knew where it was, and we knew where it came out. But Lansing filled it in. He was afraid somebody was going to get hurt. So they used it as the dump.
Oh, so it's been filled in since.
Yeah. Well, the mouth of it, they put all their rubbish from the farm onto it.
Isn't there a watering trough up there, too?
Oh, yeah, way up. Yeah. David George hewed it out of rock. It's still there.
Well, I was wondering if it was still there. I didn't know.
That's just about the
spoon. They fixed it up with the water running in it again. It's got plastic pipe now.
That's good water, too.
Yes,
or used to be, anyway.
Yeah, it is now.
There's a spring right there on the hill.
Yeah. And then... in Lincoln City, there used to be a lot of walnut trees up along the Lansing Estate. And
yeah, the kids always went and gathered walnuts
every year.
Oh, hickory nuts.
Yeah.
Hickory nuts in there,
yeah. Let's see, what else did we do?
Went out and got our Christmas tree, but we usually had to put two together to make one. That's all kind of spindly.
Well, I thank you very much. It's very interesting.